and welcome to Tell Us Where It Hurts, a conversation around health, well-being, and the many ways people across Central Indiana are offering a helping hand. I'm your host, Chris Kirshner, and today's conversation is about transportation and how it impacts the health of our community. Of health outcomes can be attributed to medical care, but 40% falls on social and economic factors, things like access to nutritious food, affordable housing, education, and one of those determinants many people may not consider as readily, transportation. Joining me to talk about the role transportation plays in our individual and community health is Leslie Gordon, Vice President of Communications and Marketing for Indigo. Leslie has spent the majority of her career in the public sector, working for agencies such as the Department of Public Works, Indianapolis Parks Department, Indiana Civil Rights Commission, and the Attorney General's Office. She's committed to giving back to the community and currently serves on IndyHub, the Parks Alliance of Indianapolis, Indiana Black Expo, and the Meridian Kessler Neighborhood Association Board of Directors. Karen Haley is the Executive Director of Indianapolis Cultural Trail, Inc., the nonprofit responsible for managing the Indianapolis Cultural Trail, a legacy of Jean and Marilyn Glick. She's been in her role since the organization's inception in the spring of 2011. Under her leadership, the Cultural Trail launched the Pacers Bike Share program in April 2014, and later this year, the Cultural Trail will be expanding once again. Welcome to you both.
Good morning.
Thanks for having us.
So the American Hospital Association reports that each year, 3.6 million people in the U.S. don't get medical care because of issues with transportation. Let's talk about here in Indianapolis and Marion County. What do we mean when we talk about transportation issues as it relates to our health?
As far as transit and transportation, I think Indy can, some people have the perception that it's a car city. And so our infrastructure isn't always built for bus transportation or even bike transportation. So really that fight to for space on the road and really creating the value of how transit can ease the flow and help toward health, because, you know, people are walking to their bus stations and they have time on that commute to get their mind right, is what I like to say, before they go to work or before they're going to their destination. So I think there's definitely a correlation, but it's a fight to get that space.
And I'd say it's also about how our city's built. So if you think about Indianapolis, you know, the city and the county are pretty much the same boundaries. And so geographically, we are really big.
Huge.
And so in terms of transportation providing challenges for getting to health access and getting to the pharmacy and getting to your doctor's appointments, a lot of times, you know, we're not built as a dense city. And so that's one of the reasons why we're car-centric or we're very car-friendly. You know, your doctor's office might be 8 miles away. And then if you don't have a vehicle, because, again, we've got great roads and we make it very easy to get there by a car. But if you're dependent on transit, if you're choosing to ride transit, if you're choosing to ride your bike or walk to where you're going, you don't that's not easy for you. You don't have Indigo's doing a great job to get our increased frequency of service so that you can have consistently, you know, every 5 to 10 minutes a bus to get on. But from a walkability standpoint, too, or riding your bike somewhere, you need that infrastructure. You need those sidewalks. You need to feel safe and separated from cars. And so it's, I think, a combination of how big our city is, but also how our city has been built and planned and designed that leads to transportation being one of those social determinants of health here in Indianapolis, because it's expensive to own a car, but that's what our city is designed for. So it's about making big changes to change that.
You mentioned the city's design, and you mentioned roads as part of the infrastructure. What other ways, like sidewalks and, I mean, bike lanes, which I'm sure, Karen, is right in your wheelhouse, you know what I mean? And I know there have been efforts over the years to get more bike lanes, but there's still a want for many of them in many areas.
I think it's one, geographically, our city, our Department of Public Works, Indigo, everyone who works at a civic level, the geographic responsibility for Indianapolis is huge. You know, we're the 12th largest city in the country, and that's a large area. So I think that's a big part of it. And you think about the demands that are put on the city, that are put on Indigo, on organizations like myself to provide great, safe, and accessible infrastructure, whether that be sidewalks, trails, transit access, bike lanes. that costs money. And so you think about the amount of money it takes to do that over 200 square miles. It's huge. If you think about the diversity of our neighborhoods, the diversity of our geography, compared to a city like Chicago, right? Like the city of Chicago is so much smaller and more dense than Indianapolis. So they're only responsible for, they might have a lot more people, but it's a lot more people in a much smaller geographic area. So the density and the zoning and the planning that goes into that is really a part of this transportation puzzle. And in Chicago, you might have the same, you know, let's just say like 10 blocks or something, right? Mm-hmm. And you're going to have many more people, many more amenities, more health benefits there. You're going to have probably doctor's offices and pharmacies. And in Indianapolis, you take that same population and it's spread out over probably, you know, 3 to 4 miles. So walking 10 blocks, riding a bike 10 blocks, taking the bus 10 blocks, that's much easier to do when you're asking someone to do that over 4 to 5 miles to get to the same services, the same healthcare providers.
You hit right on it. I was going to say, actually, we use it in our presentation. We use a map of Indianapolis, which is a pretty big square, and we lay it over Chicago. And our landmass is so much bigger. So that's a huge challenge. And with transit, part of our service standards are based on density. So we have more frequent routes where there is more, you know, businesses and work opportunities. So when you are trying to get across town, it makes planning routes a little difficult. And so we have to take that into consideration when we're expanding. And it'll take time and it takes investment.
And I think, too, going back, you know, this isn't a problem that happened over the last 5 years. This has happened over decades, even centuries. Whereas as coming out here to the studios today, around here, there's no sidewalks, you know, and that's based on decisions that were made decades ago to not require that as a part of developments going in, to not require that as a part of building new roads and other infrastructure amenities. Now there's an effort in the city. It's called, there's a complete streets ordinance was passed a few years ago. And at the time, the Indianapolis's complete street ordinance was a model across the country. But what that does is it says as the city improves and builds new streets, they're also thinking about someone who's in a wheelchair, making sure that they have adequate ADA access, safe places to ride wheelchairs, to use wheelchairs. In addition to this physical street that's built for cars, they're thinking about sidewalks, bike lanes, trails, trees even, as a part of the complete streets ordinance. And so it takes this sea change from a policy standpoint to get us where we want to go. But we're combating, you know, decades of decisions that were made to change our city to be a walkable, transit-friendly, bikeable environment.
Who do you think is most at risk when we talk about transit or transportation issues when it pertains to health outcomes? You mentioned people with disabilities and making sure that we have access. Who do you think is most at risk?
Yeah. I would say definitely those with accessibility issues, so your lower income, your persons with disabilities, and I like to tweak it to our young children. So we're trying to retain talent here in Indianapolis too, and we want to create an environment that they're ready and want to stay and proud of, and they're going to go to other big cities and use transit and use bike lanes, and they're going to come here and be like, I'm not used to this. So we need to create that environment and teach them early and create the space for them to really grow and kind of be that, you know, model city. So I think they're at risk too when we don't invest in those types of infrastructures.
And to me, that also goes to like teaching healthy habits, right? And mm-hmm. So yes, there are costs associated with not having good transit policies, not having good infrastructure policies, and not being a bikeable, walkable community. But there's also so many benefits, you know, on the flip side, instead of looking at it from what do we not have, it's what do we gain from being a bikeable, walkable, connected city. So, Leslie, you talk about children. Think about walking to school, biking to school, and those habits that you create when you're young. They totally come, you know, they stay with you through the rest of your life. And so if we think about just kids walking and biking to school, May is bike month. There's always a big push in May for bike to school day, bike to work day. And everyone rallies, or a lot of people rally for that one day. But if you can do it for a day and it's easy, just do it once a week. You know, the weather's nice now. Get your child, if you have time in the morning, where I think it's all about time and demands on our time too, right? take those extra few minutes and walk to school a day a week, and you're going to feel better. You're going to get that fresh air, that mental health break, the exercise, the endorphins. Walk to the transit stop, the Indigo stop, you know, a few blocks from your house. They're doing such a great job to increase the frequency and the density of the transit system that it's going to be easier over the next year, few years, to have transit access by your house. So it's, I think, again, making it easy and convenient to do things like biking and walking and taking transit. But that also takes infrastructure investment.
You know, it is. And I'm glad you brought this up. I was thinking it is a tale of two health outcomes here. You have the one side where you have people who just need the access just to get to a medical appointment or get to their pharmacy. And then you have people who can get to the doctor's office, they can drive or what have you, but wanting to build a more healthier lifestyle, to your point of, hey, if we have the bike trails and the walking trails and the sidewalks, maybe more people will be inclined to exercise more, and that builds better health outcomes. How much of each of your areas are dedicated to either of those sides of the coin, if you will? And Leslie, I'm going to start with you. You know, Karin has mentioned a couple of times more availability for routes and things like that. So let's talk about what Indigo is doing.
Yeah, so our whole foundation is about access. So from creating better stops that are accessible, that have ADA ramps and, you know, platforms and sidewalks that connect to those stops, to our BRT expansion, so bus rapid transit. We've done the Red Line and instituted that, which is frequent service. It resembles rail, so you pay before you board, and, you know, it's level boarding, and it creates a 10 to 15 minute frequency, so you don't have that stress of time. We're talking about, you miss that bus, you know another one is coming right away. So it does help add and create better habits. The stops are spaced out a little bit further so that we can be efficient, but, you know, that adds to, you know, that walkability. So when we do these expansions, we're adding sidewalks, we're adding multi-use pathways. So we're encouraging bike use. We have bike racks on the buses. So it is really a collaborative effort in joining that thought of creating healthy habits and using that service.
I know I wanted to ask you about the Red Line, because I know it launched, and then when we had the pandemic, and then it was like, oh, you're kidding, right? You know what I mean? So has it been able to kind of gain legs, if you will, and are people receptive to it?
Yeah, I mean, transit, I will say, is very resilient, and we have some really dependent riders. And what the pandemic showed us is that they needed our service. We had city officials that were like, make sure you maintain your service, and we were able to do that. We had to pivot and put some things in place to make sure it was safe. But as a public service, you know, cleaning is part of our operation. So when we beefed those things up, we were able to provide that service and maintain it. We definitely saw some hiccups and obviously some pause when everything shut down. But no, people were still able to access that and use it. It definitely created a different baseline year for metrics. So we're excited to see people, you know, get their vaccinations and come out as the weather gets better so that they can use our service even more as people return to work or use it for destination and recreation. As Karin kind of brought up, it's not necessarily about every single day using the bus or, you know, riding your bike, but it's about creating some moments and some good habits and opportunities. So we're excited for people to look at transit in that way as we continue to expand.
And Karin, from a cultural trails perspective then, same question to you about, you know, I would think that you're maybe more geared toward getting people into a healthier lifestyle, but maybe I'm wrong about that.
I'd say it's both. Yeah. And I think that for a few reasons. Several years ago, we partnered with Butler University to do some surveys and some data and research collection with people using the cultural trail. And what we found was that about 60% of people who were using the cultural trail during the study were using it to replace car trips. And so that might mean, you know, in the downtown area, someone who lives downtown is walking to the grocery store instead of driving their car. It might mean that someone who works downtown is walking or biking to run their errands during the day. If the trail wasn't there, they would have been getting in their car. And that's a huge number if you think about it. You know, that percentage of people who were using the cultural trail and biking or walking instead of taking car trips, over 60%, That's amazing. Think about if that was happening every day as people were replacing their car trips. And so the reason why I think we're, you know, kind of 50-50 is we know we have people who use the trail recreationally to see our city, to explore, to use Pacers Bike Share as a way to get out and get exercise. But we also know that we're providing a service, both with the cultural trail, using making it safe for you to safe and that you feel safe, right? It's about being separated from cars, that they're using the cultural trail to replace car trips. And then I think with Pacers Bike Share, you know, just like Indigo, we saw a really pause in the activity when the first shutdown happened last spring. But then once people found out what their new normal was, one of the great benefits of the cultural trail and our Pacers Bike Share program is that it's outside. And so that people could ride bikes. They could ride bikes for exercise. They could ride bikes for getting to the grocery store, you know, when people started getting out and doing their errands again. And you could do that in a way that kept you 6 feet apart from people, outdoors, so you could spend time with family and friends. And so we know it was, you know, used, it's used for both, for that commuter, but also for that recreational user.
I mentioned at the top of this episode about the social determinants of health, you know, access to healthy food or nutritious food, education, transportation, you know, put in as a part of that. How do you see them all interconnecting, housing and all of that? How do you see them all interconnecting and working together, or a ripple effect from one to the other?
They're all so related. And really, I think that goes back to zoning and planning and decisions that are made when it comes to density and infrastructure investment in our city. You know, Indigo has been doing an amazing job of expanding the BRT, the bus rapid transit lines, and that takes a lot of work. But alongside that comes discussions about changing in zoning to encourage that density. And then while you're doing that, you know, layering in bike share stations, layering in bike lanes so that you've got this, you know, really suite of alternatives for people to think about how they want to get to where they're going, and so that you can choose, what am I going to do today? You know, take the bus, ride my bike, walk. Maybe I use my car less frequently, but it's about those long-term decisions that have an impact on our future that have to do with zoning and funding.
No, you're spot on. And I would even say one thing that's been really great about Inez Evans as the new president and CEO of Indigo is she's really looking at mobility as an option and not just the 40-foot bus. So one thing we did do during the pandemic is we did a pilot with the Martin Luther King Center, and it's called Midtown Get Around. And they had the people, and they just needed the buses and some of the infrastructure, and they created an on-demand system so that people in their community could get grocery and pharmacy pickups. And so that was a smaller bus, and it was a little circulator just for that area, but it really worked for them, and they were able to pivot during the pandemic to meet those needs. And so we're looking at other places where a circulator or another mobility option can connect them to the bigger bus system or the BRT lanes. And we're seeing it already along the red, purple, and future blue line developments that are focused on, you know, multi-use housing and schools. And it's been a really cool development to see. And we're even seeing IPS look at transitioning some of their students to the bus system and getting back to that, you know, walkability of the neighborhood. So yeah, it all intersects. So once we start getting the infrastructure right for biking and walking and riding transit, the other developments around it really fall hand in hand, and the access just continues to open up.
From a community standpoint, what does the community need to do to make transit transportation more accessible, to give people more access to what they need? And then as individuals, what do you recommend? What can people do to help?
Get to know your city county councilor. You know, they are elected by you, and they are, in most cases, really willing to work with you and meet your needs. And if you have a problem with your sidewalk or if you don't have a sidewalk, let your city councilor know, because that's how things get changed, is through the council and through the civic process. And that's how funding is allocated. Same thing with Indigo, right? Like if let your city councilor know what you need in your neighborhood. I mean, I've seen it happen where someone said, you know, like, I've got a bump on my sidewalk and I trip and that makes it hard for me in my wheelchair. Let someone know. And in most cases, that's your city county councilor is kind of your line to get those things changed and to bring that onto their radar. And then I think as an individual, try to change your own habits. You know, it's so hard to change habits, but this past year, we all had to change our habits. And so as we're getting back to the new normal, it's a great way to think about how you can incorporate some of those changes. I think about just in our neighborhood, we saw people, you know, walking to the grocery store and walking to the pharmacy. Now, we're fortunate that we have those in our neighborhood, but people were walking there. So keep that habit going. Think about using Indigo one day a week. Think about Indigo to go downtown as we start to have these larger events. I think, you know, March Madness showed us that we can do this safely. Ride Indigo and you don't have to worry about parking. And then when you get down there, grab a bike share bike, use the cultural trail to walk where you're going. So I think it's just about recreating our habits in a way that support healthy activity because there are so many options in Indianapolis to do that.
I would just add, just personally, getting involved, because in your neighborhood, there's a lot of change that can happen at the local level. A lot of that is you can have an impact. So know that and find out what that could be, whether it's even just donating to an organization that's working to advance, you know, access and transit or improve your neighborhood. Like, counselors are great. Your state representatives are great. Just getting involved.
Your neighborhood associations.
Yes, they are a huge asset. I know Meridian Kessler does a really great job of creating a inventory of all the infrastructure needs in the area. So counselors have and DPW have a really easy way to see what needs to be addressed. So yeah, it's just, it can start with the little thing, habit change. It can start with a little more time and getting more involved. It can be a donation to those organizations. I would just say really being aware and knowing that it needs to happen and just picking one.
You know, it reminds me when my kids were younger that we took a field trip and took an Indigo bus because, you know, we lived in our neighborhood. There was a stop by our neighborhood, and I wanted them to understand transit and get used to it and be familiar with it. So that's a way, too, that you can get your kids familiar with what's out there.
Did a birthday party when my daughter turned 5, and we rode an Indigo bus downtown. And that was the birthday party. Because I really think knowing how to navigate a city, walking and biking and transit, those are life skills that if you go to anywhere else, you are going to be lost and won't be able to survive.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Even little things like knowing what inbound and outbound means. Right?
It's true. That's what goes back to my point with the kids. We have to teach them. Like, my kid loves to, oh, that's the green bus. You know, that's the electric one. You know, and he's like, oh, the blue bus just went by. And so just getting them used to that and know when you're going on an outing, he'll ask, are we taking the bus this time? And I love when I get to say, we actually are. We're going to enjoy it and we're going to go round trip. And he loves it. He doesn't know any different. So
wonderful. Well, Leslie Gordon, Karen Haley, thank you so much for being here, sharing your insight, and thank you for all you're doing for our communities.
My pleasure.
Thanks for having us.
I'd like to thank our guests for being part of today's discussion, and thank you for being part of our journey as we all become better listeners. I'm Chris Kirshner, and this has been Tell Us Where It Hurts. Until next time.